Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Fly Girl Show. I'm your host, Casey Grant, and we have another, I think, very exciting show today. You are going to meet Mr. Hollis, who is going to take us on a very interesting journey of being one of the first black-owned commercial airlines, Air Atlantic. So we're going to hear the history about all the trials and tribulations that it took to launch this in 1987. And if you will just tune in and call everyone and ask them to come in and listen to this exciting show, I'd like to bring in Mr. Hollis at this time. Good morning, Julius. How are you doing?
Good morning, Casey. Glad to be with you this morning. It's lovely December the 7th. Hope all is well in Chicago.
Well, we are cold. We have some sunshine. But we did have a little snow, so you are in Atlanta, and I'm sure your weather is a lot warmer than ours.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes, yes. So what we are going to talk about, we've got so many things to talk about. I'd like to know a little bit and would like my audience to know about you. You are based in Atlanta, and you are quite an interesting person. And would you like to tell us about some of your adventures and some of your businesses that you're involved in?
Well, I'll be glad to. I have a a checkered past, so to speak. I am, as one would say, a serial entrepreneur.
Uh-huh.
I am a banker by training, and got my start years ago back in the 70s after graduating from Morehouse College, and went to work for then U.S. Congressman Andrew Young, who was the first black elected to the U.S. Congress back in 100 years, back in 1973, and worked for Andy Young for about 4 years, and as the Carter administration came into power and Andy went to the U.N., I sat down with him and said, look, I want to get back in banking. And so I wind up going to work for a little known bank, which is called the Export-Import Bank, which is based in Washington, which is this country's, it provides financing to a number of U.S. companies seeking to do business abroad. And Boeing Corporation was one of our big clients. I think back in the 70s, it was probably about a $50 billion bank. And I had a responsible for most of the bank's co-financing in Africa and the Caribbean. And from as the Carter administration wound down, I came back to Atlanta to help my friend Andy Young become mayor of Atlanta in 1980. And from there, helped my late brother, Michael Hollis, to start Air Atlanta. And in the process, I've had my own business, which is called Hollis & Company. And we've provided strategic advisory services to a number of multinational corporations, particularly in the electric utility industry, as well as in the banking sector. So we just celebrated our 32nd year business. Business is growing by leaps and bounds, and it's now in the hands of a great staff with the second generation of the Hollis plan.
Okay.
And
well,
that is what we're looking forward to 2017 and the years ahead?
Well, you are quite busy. I was reading your bio, and I tell you, you gave us just a little bit of some of the things that you have done over the years, and you are quite an entrepreneur, as well as your brother was. And you are co-author of a new book, In the Arena. Is that correct?
Yes. The name of the book is In the Arena, The High-Flying Life of Air Atlanta Founder Michael Hollis. The book is a book which is a inspirational book to aspiring entrepreneurs, but also it's a very instructive book. It's a book chronologizes my brother's development as a visionary business entrepreneur, his life in Atlanta within the context of the Atlanta experience. As you very well know, Atlanta has a great reputation of being the black business mecca for African Americans in America. We have that distinction. We also are one of the leading education meccas for African Americans also in the United States, which really happened on the past beginning of the last century, with the focus of the Atlanta University schools, Clark, Morehouse, and Morris Brown College being here. And so it's a deep, rich history of Atlanta, and it shows how being a product of Atlanta, how that influenced his thinking in having the goal in the vision to start a commercial airline when he was 27 years old. And I might add, it was the only commercial airline ever started by a person of color in the United States, and it's considered the largest startup enterprise ever started by an African American in the United States.
Well, as you know, I flew for Delta, and during that time, I was in awe to hear. I wasn't based in Atlanta, but of course flew through Atlanta because that's Delta's hub. But to hear the news and to be aware that there was a black-owned airline, I was so proud. And to see that he had a fleet of 10 727s, and the service was, well, as I read, it was, he even reconfigured the airplanes so that you would have more space, which is something that we would love to be able to have these days because they've done the complete opposite. But to reconfigure it and to be able to have first-class service with tourist prices. Now, he was really ahead of his time, and at 27, that was amazing.
Well, it's really a testament to our mother and my grandmother, who always taught my brothers and sisters and myself, including Michael, to always excel. And as if you had faith in God and you were obedient and you studied hard, you would one day be able to achieve what you wanted to achieve. And so we never lacked confidence. He never lacked confidence. Even at an age when he was 10 years old, when he is attending a wedding of a cousin of mine who happened to be a member of the Ebenezer Baptist Church. At that particular event, my cousin Thelma McClinton was to be married by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Sr. But instead, Dr. King Sr. could not marry them. And in walks ML King Jr., who 2 months later would receive the Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo, Norway. that mere meeting of Dr. King by Michael Hollis, it was as if he had gone to the mountaintop, and he became so enthralled in Dr. King's advocacy for people of color that by the time he returned 12 years old, he told us he knew what he wanted to do, that he was going to become a lawyer, and that he felt that black people, their advancement in life had to be tied to economic empowerment. Now, can you imagine a 12-year-old going thinking in those type of silos?
No.
And from everything he did from his life at 12 years old, he got to know the right people in Atlanta. He was mentored by elder people, forward-looking, thinking people, thought leaders in Atlanta, both black and white. And by the time he finished high school, instead of going to Morehouse College where all of us, where I had gone, he decided to go to Dartmouth because he felt that going to Dartmouth would widen his depth. And while at Dartmouth, he established himself as a student leader. And from there, he went to the University of Virginia Law School and again became a student leader in the University of Virginia Law School, becoming the president of the first black president of the American Bar Association.
Okay.
Which was a 30,000-unit member organization. Actually, he was elected president back in 1974 in Chicago as a student, as a law student, a freshman law student at 1975 in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But from there, he went into banking at Oppenheimer, served a year with the Three Mile Island Commission as the deputy general counsel. And then he saw a business opportunity, having worked on Wall Street for Oppenheimer, and saw an opportunity to develop, at that time, the United States government, the old Civil Aeronautics Board under the Jimmy Carter administration, was looking at the possibility of deregulating airlines.
Okay.
And he decided that having no experience, you know, he's a lawyer, he's a banker, at 27 years old, he came into my office at Ex-Im Bank and said, look, I want to start an airline, and this is what I want to do. And we sat there for about 4 hours going through the whole litany of what needed to be done. It was a challenge. But I knew that if he had the right plan, and it was done. So everything just fell in place. It took about three years afterwards to get the license to fly. But yes, we finally flew in February of 1984. We started with 10 aircraft. The airline was a luxury airline. It was built. Mimic the Swiss airlines, where it was a luxury airline. It was first class, business class, no coach seats. We served food on China. Even when you came to the ticket counter in Atlanta Airport, you didn't have to get on the people's movers. We had a bus that would take you straight from the, once you got your ticket, that would shuttle you straight to the tarmac of the plane, and you would board the plane there. Similar to what Delta Airlines is doing for right now for its private jet clientele with Porsche here in Atlanta.
Okay, yes.
So it was a great airline. I mean, we flew to about 15 cities. And in our final year of flying, which was 1987, we carried about 1.5 million people on about 15 refurbished 727s. It was a great experience. And it is a story that needed to be told to the American public because, Casey, many of the young people, many of the black millennials, although millennials, period, were not were just being born in 1987 when airlines stopped, or had not been born in 1987. So that part of history, they're not familiar with. You would be shocked to know how many people around this country don't know that there was a black man that created a luxury airline, a first-tier business. They're shocked. So for me, putting this book together and telling this story was important for his legacy, and then also for the to inspire other young people of color to excel, achieve, to never give up. So I'll say it's a very intriguing story.
Well, I was very happy when I saw the launch, the soft launch of the book, and I had to reach out and contact you and have you on the radio show, because these are the type of stories that I like to have on the Fly Girl Show. It is opening up your minds and introducing you to different facts, African American history, that we just don't know. And when I speak to the students throughout, you know, the country, which is what I do on my book signings, this is what I try to tell them, enlighten them, that going into the airline industry doesn't mean just pilot or flight attendant. Now, this will be the bar that I will give them. Not only can you work, why wouldn't you even think about owning your own, which was done in 1984, which they will, you're right, they have no clue. And I cannot wait to continue to promote your book, to promote the legacy of your brother, because this is a part of history that we need to know. And I'm proud that you have done this. I think it's very exciting, and I know he is smiling from heaven, knowing that you are carrying on his legacy and telling his story. Because I wanted to ask a question. Was he involved in aviation? Was it a passion of his? Or did he just come out with this wonderful vision of creating an airline?
Well, he was involved, as I indicated, when he was in law school, actually when he was at Dartmouth, for one or two summers, he was an intern with the Urban Mass Transit Authority and the local Rapid Transit Authority here, Atlanta Metropolitan Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority. So transportation, even though that was rail transportation, he had an interest in transportation issues because for him, he saw transportation, the whole transportation infrastructure, as a way of improving the quality of life in communities. That okay. Transportation was a way to level the playing field, change the communities, improve the quality of life in communities, and as a way as economic empowerment platform.
Okay.
He never had experience in aviation, but that did not stop him from putting together the prerequisite strategic thinking and getting the expertise and raising the money. The most difficult thing was to raise the money. When you think about it, you know, it was raising $100 million to start an airline, which is a small sum, because the airline business is such a capital intensive business.
Yes.
So for Michael, he broke all the norms. He didn't just think outside the box. He said, "To hell with the box. I'm going to make this work." And that's what's the that was the genius of Michael Hollis. That was his genius. As the kids would say today, he was a beast. He was a genius at what he did.
Well, I'm thinking in my mind that how did he even think it was possible? You know, to dream, and I love that your parents instilled that in you, and I think that's what's lacking with the youth today. They don't have vision. They don't have dreams. And so, therefore, they stay very low on the bar, and they never know that they could excel. But to even think that you could compete with Delta Airlines, because you flew, the airline was you flew Southeast area, and Delta and Eastern, during those tight days, they had the monopoly.
Well, we had a great mayor, Maynard Jackson.
Oh, yes,
in my estimation, probably the greatest and the father of affirmative action and supply diversity in the United States.
Yes.
Maynard, because of his leadership as mayor of Atlanta. Atlanta at that time was building a new airport, if you may recall, when Maynard came into power in 72. And when Maynard came into power as mayor, Maynard Jackson basically told the Atlanta business community, which never really forgave him, even 40 years later.
Exactly.
We're going to, you know, you can have 70% of the pie, or you could have 0% of the pie. We're going to build this airport with black participation as joint venture partners or subcontractors. And the airport was built on time, ahead of schedule, and saved money. So having Maynard as a dear friend and as a mentor, that part of the equation was in place, because we knew that if we could raise the money, put the team together, which was a difficult task.
Yes.
Then we knew that we could get gate space in Atlanta. And despite Delta Airlines and other large major carriers, they did not, it was like Daniel's going into the lion's den. We went into that den, but we came out unscratched, unshaved. And it goes really it goes back also to what Dr. King admitted in his latter part of his years, about a year or two before his assassination in Memphis, that, you know, economic empowerment is the next phase of the full emancipation of African Americans in our societies. And we're still fighting that battle today. Patient in the economy.
Absolutely.
Full participation in first tier and second tier, first tier businesses. We're fighting that every day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think of Martin so many times when I see how disorganized we are and how I think we have slipped. So far, we've slipped further back than what he accomplished in his fight for equality for us, and it's really a very sad situation. And the struggle continues, and the struggle is getting harder for that.
Well,
Casey,
I think that what we have to, the mindset we have to develop now, and particularly young African Americans, is that we're not captive of any political entity, that we have interests. Okay, we have no boundaries on our interests.
Mm-hmm.
And that we have to create not one leader, but we have to create a generation of leaders.
Absolutely.
And that generation of leaders has to come from our millennials, from the next group of people that will lead. That generation has to come. So this book was something that I promised my late mother that I would write, and I have a wonderful author who was able to capture the spirit and the genius of Michael Hollis. And she was an investigative reporter and White House correspondent for Gannett News during the Clinton administration. Deborah Mathis, she's a four-time author. And she just did a wonderful, wonderful job in writing the book. After I probably interviewed about five or six authors, she really captured his spirit.
Okay.
And the book has been publicly endorsed by Ludacris, who's an actor, entertainer.
Yeah.
By Linda Johnson, who's the chairwoman of Johnson Publications there in Chicago.
Yes.
And by Shirley Franklin, the former mayor of the city of Atlanta.
Yes.
And others.
Yes.
So it's a wonderful book. It's a wonderful storyboard of what can be done if you do it the right way.
And if you allow yourself to dream and stick to your dream and move forward, you have to have dreams. And I just think there's something that's lacking in this in the youth today. They just don't feel that they could dream as high as the stars. I mean, go beyond the stars on your dreams and your aspirations. But I'm so happy that you did write the book, and I'm glad that, I stumbled up on it on Facebook and was just so impressed and so excited to see that there was going to be, or there is, a book out. Now, this is the soft launch. How and when will you be doing the hardcore? Will you be going around the country for book signings? And obviously, you know, where can people buy the book?
Well, the beauty of the situation is that Air Atlanta flew to 15 cities. We flew all along the eastern seaboard, all the way up to Boston, and the major cities, New York, both airports in New York, Philly, Newark, Baltimore, all the way down in Florida, as far west as Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Midway, Chicago, Minneapolis. So we're going to do a tour beginning in mid-January to all of those cities over the next throughout 2017.
Yes.
And and so the book can be acquired through www.michaelhollisbook.com. It also can be acquired on Amazon via Barnes & Noble and other, and then Apple Books through Apple Books, the electronic version through ebook version through Apple Book via iPad and iPhones. The book is in production and being distributed globally. So as we begin to get ready for our hard launch in mid-January, we will be targeting those cities where Atlanta flew. So the first soft launch, of course, is here in Atlanta, since this is our own home turf, so to speak. But
yes,
the hard launch will be in mid-January, and we'll go through the course of 2017.
Have you considered sending your information into the new museum in D.C. for a donation? Your brother's history?
Yeah, we've already reached out to the director, executive director, back in October. So we are likely going to do that. I know that some elements of Air Atlanta are already on display, a teeny display, in the Smithsonian Aviation Museum.
Oh.
But I think an appropriate place, of course, would be in the museum, African American Museum in Washington. So we're in discussions now. We've talked to the people with the leadership at the museum, and we'll get back to them later this year, first or next year, about getting some artifacts on display up there, Air Atlanta artifacts.
Absolutely. I was there for a opening for the one of the many, many openings that they had, and it's a beautiful, beautiful museum. And my book, as I've said before, my book and different artifacts from the uniforms back in there, because Stars in the Sky, that is what my book is about. It's another part of the aviation history that isn't known. And our history starts back in 1956 when the first woman applied for the job and was denied. And so I believe that that is a part of history that should be on display also. And so I think we'll be in the same section at the museum.
Okay.
We'll
be in the same cabin. I like that. We'll be in the same cabin.
We'll be in the same cabin. Isn't that the truth? And I'm so looking forward to definitely adding you in on the different lectures that I give and promoting your book, because it is a very, very important part of history that needs to be known, and it should be a book that all children should read. They need to know there was a black-owned airline.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And with every ounce of my spirit, I'm gonna make sure that happens, because I think books such as In the Arena and books such as yours are very important for young black people to understand, and
right.
to understand how they need to, as you talked about so eloquently, set their dreams high. But in setting their dreams high, they must always be prepared.
Exactly. That's the first step, preparation. And that means not dropping out of high school.
Exactly.
That means dreaming and going further. Just continue. You know, that was one of the wonderful things, another part of my wonderful life. I went back and got my degree in interior design when I was in my 50s. And it was the most rewarding. I, of course, was an A student. I was the student speaker. But it was such a rewarding challenge because I was competing against myself. I didn't have to prove anything to anyone. And I think when you stop dreaming and you stop becoming an adventurer, your life is dull. I won't say it's over, but it becomes very dull and complacent. And that's what you have to fight. Because I'd love to think that we will be around till we're like 90 and still saying, let's dream about something else. And that's where it starts, with your dreams.
Amen, my sister. Amen.
So now I know that we're going to hear and read so many more stories, but can you kind of give us a little bit of why the airline ended in 87. So it was in existence from 1984 to 1987.
Yeah, from 1984, we started flying in February 1984. Now, last year, 1987, we carried that single year, 1987, 1.5 million people. The reason that it it stopped flying was simply that our investors decided to pull the plug.
Okay.
Oh, our investors decided to pull the plug, which we go into the book and we discuss that.
Exactly. I figured you would, yeah.
And had the investors at that critical point not pulled the plug, we would probably still be flying today, some
absolutely
29 years later, and would be one of the top tier airlines in existence.
Well, I do believe that. I really do believe it. And because of his such an advance in his thinking, he was so progressive that no telling you. As I said to you, your brother was so amazing from the things that I read. I think he would have given Obama a challenge for the White House.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean,
you don't think he'd have his aspirations for taking
that? Well, Barack Obama is a very unique figure in history. I think
yes.
Michael's uniqueness in history was that he was a genius at business. His genius in business did not end with Air Atlanta, as we detail in the book. He was very successful in a number of other ventures after Air Atlanta. We were talking about a guy who was a genius at putting deals together.
Okay.
One of his problems was that he could never find the person that could implement his vision of his dream once a business was put together. So from that standpoint, Air Atlanta was just one of his many business ventures. He was a genius at putting deals together, and and I think it's a good read. So I think it's a good read for a number of people to read it. I'm just tickled to death to be able to offer it to the public, because I want the public, particularly our community,
yeah,
to understand how one must navigate in this sea to make it of sharks. You know, if you're going to swim with the sharks, you got to learn how to swim with the sharks.
you swim faster than the sharks, I tell you.
Yeah.
Now, are you going to get it in the school systems, I'm sure, in Atlanta and all
over?
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. 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 Absolutely.
Yes.
We're
going to
get it in
yes.
the school systems, particularly the universities, HBCUs and other universities.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, this will be a new part of, you know, I have a problem that every African-American History Month, Black History Month, it seems like we always celebrate the same heroes. And there's so many that are unknown. And I think that this February, that would be my goal, to make you one of the top ones that I would definitely tell people that they need to reach out and read about Michael Hollis, because it is another important part of history that is unknown. And I think that your book is going to do well. I would do my part to see that it would
do
well.
Thank you, and I appreciate
the word, and I'm really thankful for you to be on the radio show today.
Well, I'm glad, Casey, that you reached out, and it was an honor for me to be on your program today.
And so can you tell us one more time where we can, and I would also put it on my website, where people can obtain the book?
Yes, you can get the book by going to www.michaelhollisbook, or you can also get the book via Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and ebook version of the book via Apple Books.
Okay. Well, we will be looking forward to staying in contact with you, and maybe I would also like to be able to inform the audience at different book signings that you will be hosting throughout the country, and help generate an audience for you. And so I, at this point, would like to say thank you so much, and I'm going to close the show. But I'd like to say once again, thank you for taking the time out to be on the show, on the Fly Girl Show today.
Well, Casey, thank you very much, and look forward to coming up to the Windy City.
Yes.
To break bread with you. Thank you very,
okay,
very much.
Okay, that would be fine. And I will be calling you in a few just to give you my mailing information.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you
okay.
so
Bye.
Much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, I hope everyone enjoyed that interview today. It was so inspiring for me to see that there was a book out on Michael Hollis and the airline. I remember during the days when I was flying through Atlanta, through Hartsfield, and people were talking about this fantastic airline owned by an African-American man. So to have this book in print, to read his story, to be able to share his story, and to enlighten the youth and the old, because there's a lot of blacks that don't know this part of aviation history. And as everyone knows, that is my goal. I try to reach out and to introduce you to different people in aviation that you may not know or have never heard of. And so if I would like to once again send out a wonderful shout for Julius Hollis and his fantastic book that he co-authored, and In the Arena. So please check back on my website. Please keep a close contact and see where you possibly can make one of the book signings and spread the word, because this is a fantastic, unknown, untold story in aviation. So thank you for joining me today, as I am on the show every Wednesday from 11 to 12 Central Standard Time. This is Casey Grant, and I am your host of the Fly Girl Show. Please stay tuned. Please tell your friends and tune in when I would love to bring you another very interesting, unknown person to interview on my show. Have a very, very great day and a wonderful week. And remember, your blessings are as numerous as the stars in the sky. Thank you so much, and have a very pleasant day.